Hi, my name is Max Pacheco, and my favorite thing is finding obscure Disney films.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. It is Sunday. Cowboys attacking the keyboard right now. It's Sunday, June 27th. And I am in the next 50 minutes have to get on the road for a week-long road trip, but I have to be in Grand Rapids by 2 p.m. Eastern. It's currently 8 a.m. Central. I am pushing it. And from there, I continue on to New York City on a road trip to meet my dad to collect some sculptures. So I'm going to keep this intro short and sweet. And enjoy this interview with Max Pacheco. We are talking about the hunt for Disney movies. And it's a fun one. Keep finding making time for your favorite things. Be safe. I will talk to you soon. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. Today's guest is Max Pacheco. He is an amateur Disney historian, a Twitch streamer, and the co-star of Sporadic Phantoms, which is a scripted fictional podcast. Max comes to the podcast today through Kathy and I collaborated on a comic book anthology about menopause, which has now been nominated for an Eisner Award. Very exciting. So I'm also grateful to Kathy for making the introduction. Max, how are you doing tonight?
I am good. And first of all, congrats on the nomination.
Thank
very
you.
Very happy for you, Kathy, and everyone else involved.
I'm very excited about the Eisner Award. It was never anything I imagined was like something that would go on my resume, was like Eisner nominated writer. So it's very neat.
Yes. Yeah, I'm excited to be here dealing with a little bit of imposter syndrome. You had very kindly tagged me in a tweet about upcoming guests. And I clicked on the other people and I was like, oh, these are real people. And I am not.
Unless the Zoom is lying to me, I believe you are also a real person.
I mean, you know, there's filters, mm-hmm. you know, and whatnot that you can put on to appear as yes. though you are real, but I'm not convinced that I am, in fact, a real person.
I mean, I suppose you could be one of the phantoms from your podcast, and since it's from one podcast to another, the listener will never know.
Yes, well, The podcast is as of yet not supernatural, but well, you know, stay tuned because you never know what's going to happen.
How did you get into having I listen to some improvised, like I'll listen to a Magic Tavern here or there. Mm-hmm. I'll listen to the occasional improvised podcast. But how did you come to the world of doing a scripted fictional podcast?
I have very little creative input. I am an actor on this one through my friend Julie, who is our producer, writer, director. She wears many, many hats. And this was sort of a pandemic project, mm-hmm. I guess. It was a Facebook group that gave birth to a beautiful child that is our podcast. I became a part of it kind of last minute, actually. So,
how many episodes are live and in the world?
We've got 5 episodes out right now, nice. And they're pretty long. So, you know, strap yourselves in if listeners out there, if you're into it.
It's pretty long, a 3-hour podcast?
No. It's just, I find a lot of things like this. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, so it's, you know, quick bites, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And oh. us, it's like, no, strap yourselves in. You're going on a journey. You know, this takes place over a long period of time, and you know, talks to a lot of people, and a lot of stuff happens, and yeah.
That's outstanding. And where in the world do I find you today?
Where do you find me? Like physically? Where am
yeah.
I? Where do I dwell?
Where do you dwell?
I am in the Boston area, Boston, Massachusetts.
Nice.
Yes.
What am I saying? It's almost July. Obviously, summer has come to Boston.
Yes.
Yeah.
In a very hot, humid, sweaty way. Although today wasn't too bad.
Yeah. You probably got the tail end of a storm we had a few nights ago. We had a tornado in the southern suburbs of Chicago. I'm in Chicago.
Oh.
And then today has just been, I had to close my windows because it's been a thunderstorm off and on all day today, which has been kind of nice. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like some rain here as well, but we haven't had some in a bit. So we'll see.
Podcasting was one of your COVID hobbies. Were there any other hobbies you picked up during the pandemic?
Yes. In fact, this is going to be a great transition here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what I started off doing was saying, oh, there are great directors that I love whose work I haven't completed all of their work. So why don't I watch all of Hitchcock? Why don't I watch all of, who else did I complete? Spielberg, David Lynch, you know?
All right. These are not small filmographies.
No, no. However, I had a big head start on completing their filmography. So.
Okay. So it counted. If you had already seen something, it counted towards your list.
Yes. This wasn't a rewatch sort of thing. Yeah. And eventually that became sort of chasing the dragon of trying to get after that high. You know? And I realized that why I hadn't seen a lot of these movies is because I wasn't interested in them in the first place.
So what is an example of maybe a Hitchcock or a Spielberg that you started watching and you're like, oh, now I know why I never saw it?
As far as Hitchcock goes, I guess the Paradine Case, that was just one where I was just like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was another one, The Wrong Man. That one's, whatever. It's not very fun.
But it's a really good British sitcom. There's a Wrong Man. It's, I think it's called The Wrong Man. It is a very funny, The Wrong Man's with a, it's James Corden. It was before James Corden before we knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of two hapless dudes end up in a web of crime and they're trying to get out of it, but they keep getting implicated further.
Well, The Wrong Man, starring Henry Fonda, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Henry Fonda is a normal guy going about his business, and then he is mistaken for a guy who committed a crime, and he is arrested. And then they find the right man, and he is let go. The end.
spoiler alert.
that's how that one goes. So that didn't rock my socks. So once I was no longer riding on that high of, woohoo, I'm completing these filmographies, and I was just bummed out. Once again, because of, you know, pandemic blues, I decided to seek solace in something that I thought would be totally happy and joyful. And that was a Disney movie that I hadn't seen. And I'm pretty good about covering like the well-known Disney movies. So I had to look around a bit. And what I thought would bring me great joy and happiness is the Kurt Russell starred film The Strongest Man in the World.
So live action.
Yes, live action. This is the, as I found out, the third in a trilogy that starts with the better known The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes.
The better known.
Yes.
But still, I've never heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah, I remember even when I was little, they remade that with Kirk Cameron. And I was very confused because I didn't know what tennis shoes were.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, the computer wore tennis shoes. And I just kept seeing Kirk Cameron. And I didn't see a robot playing tennis. And I was just very confused. So I watched this movie and it did bring me great joy, even though by all accounts, even by Disney fanatics, it is not a good film.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, it brought me out of my pandemic blues.
Okay.
And I was looking for someone else who this had brought joy to. And this brought me to my friend, Jess Lambert, who is, well, she's my friend now. She became my friend because I found her YouTube series, Every Disney Movie Ever.
Okay.
And in which she's watching every Disney movie ever. And I watched her review, and me, for some reason, thinking I wanted to be friends with this woman, decided that I would go about it by messaging her and saying, hey, I should be on your show. And for some reason, she said, okay.
Yeah.
And then I was, and now we're friends. And
that's
we
awesome.
Chat quite often and send each other pictures of dogs.
Fantastic. I think new internet friends is an outstanding pandemic outcome.
Yes.
Yeah. 100% love a pandemic internet new bestie.
So my friendship with Jess led to me being saying, hey, do you need help with anything?
Like,
I can find movies. I can do this. And she was like, yes, and sent me this massive list of 30 plus movies, which I have now dwindled down to 12. I think I'm at right now. And this became my new high that I was chasing, is searching for forgotten or slash lost Disney films.
So these are things that, so I'm 44, which means I have strong memories of Disney movies coming out of the vault.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
right.
When I was a kid, kind of, I'm going to say like pre-Aladdin, pre-Lion King, right? When movies would come out of the vault. And when I was a kid, it's the first time they were being offered for home purchase. So they weren't just going back into movie theaters. People were able to buy VHS tapes, but they were limited edition, right? They weren't going to be available forever. So I have a strong memory of that. So this is a list of 30 movies that are either like not streaming on Disney Plus, not out of the vault, or like not in the vault rotation. And are you looking for VHS tapes? Are you looking for digital copies that are hidden on Pornhub? Like, what does looking for lost movies mean?
All of the above, although I have not checked Pornhub yet. That is worth a look. I will type my list in later and see what I get. Who knows what I'll get if I type in U.S. Marshals Waco and Reinhardt into Pornhub, you know? Maybe it's hiding there.
You might find it there.
Perhaps, or maybe I'll discover a new interest,
right,
shall we say. But no, I am searching air, land, and sea. If I can find a digital copy, I'll take it. If I can find a VHS, I will convert it. A DVD, I will convert it. And I'm only converting these things so I can share them with Jess, really.
Yeah. And then is she making like a reaction video to it?
Basically, well, okay. It's reviews.
Not, yeah.
She has a rating system in which she rates acting, directing, cinematography, writing, and all of that.
Yeah.
Which you can find for individual movies on her channel by video.
All right. So you started with a list of 30.
30-ish.
30-ish.
Yeah.
And when you first looked at that list, were any of them movies you'd heard of? Like, how lost were these movies?
They were, well, fairly lost, as it turns out, especially going down to these last 12. Some of them, I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of have heard of those. Just, you know, being in the the dark Disney circles of the internet that I dwell in, or stuff that had at one time, I remember, aired on the Disney Channel, because as someone who watched a lot of Disney Channel growing up, I remember that they'd just be like, coming up next, it's Ladies and the Champ, which
but is that sounds like
a movie
not...
I'm looking for.
But Ladies and the Tramp is a movie about dogs. So is Ladies and the Champ...
No, this is Ladies and the Champ, yeah. This is about two old ladies that decide to take in a man who's down on his luck and train him as a boxer.
I hope there's a pasta scene in it. I hope there's at least one scene where one of the ladies and the boxer are having some spaghetti.
I don't know. It stars Dom DeLuise's son, David DeLuise.
Uh-huh.
And the only money I've ever spent on Cameo was $9 to message him and say, hey, do you have any idea where I can find this movie that you were in this one time? And then he said, no, sorry. And I guess he felt bad that I wasted my $9. So then he sent me a selfie.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Olympia Dukakis? This is a great cast.
I know, right? Like, get this on Disney Plus. We need this. Someone has this, which has been my philosophy in this search. Someone has this. But going to the Disney Vault, I don't think these movies are in the Disney Vault. Some of them have had very rare DVD releases, and thankfully acquiring those DVDs is fairly easy because they're not really that high in demand. I've been able to get a lot of DVDs for like $6 or whatnot. They had very, very limited releases, or you had to be part of the Disney Movie Club or whatever.
Sure.
And a few of these have been released on VHS, but now that I'm at like the bottom of the barrel, I'm just hoping that someone out there has recorded these on VHS and makes them available somehow. That's pretty much where I'm at.
This is such a fun hobby. So you meet Jess, you go on her show. I assume you go on her show to talk about The Strongest Man in the World.
No, actually, because she had already done a video about it, which is how I found her. So I just said, hey, I'm a person. I've made some videos and I can talk. How about I go on your channel? And she was kind of like, yeah, okay. And then I was like, you know what? I got to give this person a reason to have me on her channel. So I found a movie that she did not have a copy of, that she had specifically made a video about the fact that she couldn't find.
Okay.
Which was The Whiz Kid and The Mystery at Riverton.
The Whiz Kid and The Mystery at Riverton.
Yes. So I tracked that down and said, hey, I found this movie. Why don't we talk about it? And then that's when she actually scheduled us doing the video.
That's really fun. So then you went on and you talked about this new movie.
Yes. New to us. Yes.
How fun. So have you been watching the movies as they come in before you send them off to her?
No. I've actually had a hard time keeping up with them because I've found so many at this point. But I have sporadically been watching some of them, or the ones that have been really, really hard to find. As sort of like, I've defeated them, like, you know, mounting the head on the wall. I'm like, I'm watching this now. Like, I did that with Secret of the Pond. That was one that was really hard to find.
Yeah.
That was one where I was Googling all over the place. I was messaging the star of the film. And finally, I just found someone's blog who just listed that they had watched the movie. Not even that they owned a copy of it, just that they had watched the film. And I sent them an email saying, is there any way that you have a copy of this that you can share with me?
Yeah.
I will pay you. And after weeks of not hearing back, they said, hey, I was out of the country, but yeah, I have this on VHS. And yeah, I ripped it to a digital copy. And no, you don't have to pay me.
Oh, how nice.
And I was just walking around, just like like I had like a like some sort of like dirty secret or something. Like I was so elevated by finally finding this. I remember I got the email while I was dog walking, which is my job.
Yeah.
And I was just so thrilled and I was in disbelief. I was like, this guy's not going to email it to me. This file's not going to work. He doesn't have the right thing. And then I saw it and saw the file and I downloaded it and it was real and everything. And I was like, it's real.
Amazing.
And I was just talking about this dopamine rush that I got to Kathy Leamy. And here we are.
Ah, that's perfect. I love it.
Right.
Before I hit record, I said to you, Max, when I hear the lost movies of Disney, I assume it's movies we don't watch because they're racist.
Mm-hmm.
And you were about to say something and we were like, no, save it for the record. So tell me more about that, about whatever it was you were going to say before the podcast.
Okay, so I've talked to other people about this Disney hunt that I'm on.
Yeah.
And a lot of people assume, oh, so you're looking for the racist stuff that they bury. Or,
right.
Oh, you're looking for Song of the South.
Right.
And no, everyone thinks Song of the South is like this long lost film. You can find it. I think it was even on YouTube for a while, like for years even. You can find it if you really want to watch it. It's a film.
Yeah.
It has its merits and obviously it has its issues.
Yes.
I won't go too far into that. And even myself, some of these movies, I'm like, why did these movies disappear? They must have problematic elements, right? They must have been swept under the rug. But so far, none of the films that I found that have been like hidden or obscure or hard to locate have really had any large problematic elements. And as I've been going through some of the Disney catalog, mm-hmm. even thing like just watching things that aren't necessarily part of my search, just things that I was interested in, I find that the things that are racist are just readily available for anyone. In fact, you can just watch them on YouTube. Like Mickey's Melodrama, which is a cartoon in which Mickey, at the start of it, puts on blackface and then proceeds to perform a hilarious rendition of Uncle Tom's Cabin with his friends. You can find this on YouTube. It's been on YouTube for, I don't know, 11 years or something. And
whoa.
Disney hasn't hunted that one down and put it away.
Right.
Yes. You can also, on YouTube, officially, via Disney, rent One of Our Dinosaurs Is Missing, which has about two scenes in it that don't rely on yellowface jokes.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is rough.
Yeah.
So are these lost movies, is it more that they were TV movies? They're like made for TV. They were that they're lost because they were just like, I didn't have the Disney Channel growing up. We were a Nickelodeon house. Mm-hmm. So I didn't grow up on the Disney Channel. So I didn't know if these were these movies that, we'll stick with the world's strongest man. That's wrong. Yeah. The world's strongest man.
Strongest man in the world.
Yes. If we stick with the strongest man in the world, was that a made for TV movie that was on every few years? And so people had a love for it, or do you think it was in your research? Are these like one and done movie of the week? And then if you didn't see it, you didn't see it.
So Strongest Man in the World, that was a theatrical release, but many of the ones that I'm hunting down, it's if you didn't see it, then you didn't see it. And maybe they showed it on TV once, and then maybe at 2 a.m. the Disney Channel showed it because they had to show something at 2 a.m. and they didn't want to waste the good stuff. Part of my fascination, in fact, with these movies comes from the first time I went to Disneyland.
Okay.
And I was a younger lad. I was maybe 12 or so. And I was coming from the East Coast, so I was jet lagged, which meant I was just staying up late watching TV. Mm-hmm. And what do you watch on TV at the Disneyland Hotel? Well, you watch, you know, Disney. The Disney stuff that they show. And I remember I had a leftover piece of cake because they had, I think it was a 17-layer chocolate cake that they served at the restaurant. That
sounds outstanding.
I think they still serve it now. So I have nothing to do. You know, it's like 2 a.m. or whatever because I'm jet lagged and I've got my cake. And me and my family are watching the Disney Channel. And I remember the Gnome-mobile was on. And it was just this magical feeling because I had never heard of this movie, mm-hmm. but it was fine. It was fairly entertaining. And it was almost as if it was part of the experience, as if Disneyland had their own Disney films that you can only see there. Like in Japan, when you go to the Studio Ghibli Museum, they have shorts that you can only see at the Ghibli Museum.
Okay.
It almost felt like that. Or like on Rick and Morty, where they have interdimensional television. It was almost like I was seeing an alternate universe in which the two kids from Mary Poppins, who are in the Gnome-mobile, didn't make Mary Poppins. Instead, they made the Gnome-mobile, and no one really cared.
Is it the gnome mobile as in like a garden gnome, or is it the Gnome-mobile, like no, you can't have it?
Gnome as in garden gnome.
Okay.
Yes, or more like David the gnome, I guess.
Is David the gnome the driver, or is the whole, is it like a wiener-mobile shaped like a gnome?
No. It's regular size people driving the car, but they happen to have gnomes as passengers who
okay.
they're giving a ride to.
Okay.
Yes.
So you see that. You've never seen it before.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Did you ever see it again?
I haven't watched it in its fullest, but not too long ago, I was like, hey, that was a thing that I watched that one time that had an impact on me. And I went back and I watched clips and I was like, yeah, that's more or less how I remember it. And right. I understand why this didn't become like a thing that had a, you know, a Broadway adaptation and a sequel the way that Mary Poppins did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's hard. It is. It's difficult to meet the magic of a Mary Poppins.
Yes.
Although if you describe it to someone who doesn't know it's a beloved film, it sounds bananas. It sounds as bananas as the Gnome-mobile.
Oh, yeah. And the more obscure live-action Disney films have some wonderful titles, like The Million Dollar Duck, The Happiest Millionaire, The Horse in the Gray Flannel Suit. Lots of titles with horses. The Littlest Horse Thieves.
I feel like The Horse in the Gray Flannel Suit I for sure saw.
Ah, yeah. See, there's always one, and that's one of the great things about when people upload some of these more obscure films to YouTube, is there's always someone who's like, I watched this all the time as a kid, and thank you for sharing it.
Yeah.
And before Disney Plus came out, people were saying, this is it! They're gonna have everything! Absolutely everything! No, they're gonna let everything out of the vault! We're gonna have every Disney movie ever made! And then someone put this article together, I think it was like, the 600 things that aren't on Disney Plus.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember, I think Jess said out of her list, there was only like one movie that was added to Disney Plus that she was looking for. And I think it was The Boy Who Talked to Badgers was the name of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was Kurt Russell, so Kurt Russell was like in everything Disney. He was in The Horse in the Gray Flannel Suit.
Yeah, he did a lot of Disney films, and then he did Used Cars to sort of break out of that stereotype.
And I tried to watch Used Cars. They covered it on Blank Check.
Yes, I listened to that episode.
Yeah, well, I listened to it because Jason Mantzoukas was on it.
Ah, fellow Massachusetts boy.
Yes. And that, well, actually, that was the episode that got me into listening to Blank Check. So I didn't know that that was Kurt Russell's breakout away from Disney role.
Yeah. And then, of course, he starts doing, you know, John Carpenter films and everything.
Because didn't he and Goldie Hawn have, like, a fun Disney movie together?
It's a really long title. It's the one and only genuine original family band, I think is the name of it.
Yeah.
And they didn't really, I mean, they were both on set together, but they didn't really do anything. I think Goldie Hawn is listed as like smiling girl or something. Like that's how big her role was.
Got it. Yeah, Kurt Russell is on this D23.com is listed as a Disney legend. Because he did 12 movies.
And I predict he will do more.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yes.
I do like to time travel with people.
Okay.
Did that trip to Disneyland when you were 12, did that hook you into Disney? Like, are you a Disney fan or are you really just like digging this difficult Disney history task?
Both. I would say first and foremost, I am a Disney fan.
Okay.
Like that encompasses more of my being and covers more of my timeline.
Yeah.
But the experience that I had with the Gnomemobile just sort of opened me up to this whole other world of like, oh, we're just scratching the surface. You know, everyone talks about Sleeping Beauty and mm-hmm. Mary Poppins and all these things, but there's more. There's so much more.
There's so much more. Yeah.
And maybe just to, in fact, to cinema in general, in high school, I started becoming a movie hunter. And that was just before Netflix became a thing. So I was like going to video stores and saying, you know, like, hey, do you have this film and these sort of things? And actually physically, you know, hunting things down. I couldn't just torrent some film.
Yeah. But, right. So is this when you're saying before Netflix was a thing, are you saying before even the like mailing the DVDs was a thing or?
Right. And I think Disney is especially a fascinating hunt for me because, like, you know, there are obscure films out there that I've, you know, been hunting down. And I think I've pretty much found every movie I've ever, like, really been looking for, except for stuff that's presumably been lost to time.
Yeah.
Like silent films and whatnot that are just, you know, gone. And maybe someone will find it in a vault somewhere someday, but who knows? But with, like, Disney movies, I think I'm fascinated with finding them because, like, it's one of those things where you would think we would have all of those. Like, there are people that are Disney fanatics. There are people with Disney tattoos. Right. There are people that, you know, try to collect all of Disney and pride themselves on watching Disney. How did we lose some of them? How did they fall through the cracks? You know, this should be a thing. There should be a complete collection.
Yeah, of the great film studios... Disney has obviously been a part of mergers, but they're always like above the line, right? Like it's always, I mean, Disney ABC, didn't Disney acquire Pixar?
Yeah.
They're a company now.
Yeah.
Or the same company now. But it's not like the old studios that are now, that have been through so many mergers and acquisitions that they're just like, don't exist. Disney has been its own entity since Walt Disney started it. So I agree with you. You would think that, although there was a fascinating, it might have been a Tumblr post or a Twitter thread that was about reusing cells in the early hand-drawn Disney movies. That if you look at certain choreographed scenes, like the dances will be the same or some of the ways that people move around each other are the same because they would kind of like go back a level. They would literally just copy themselves and copy the work from a Snow White to a Cinderella. And then they would have little mice instead of dwarves or something in the scene. And so at the beginning, I mean, this isn't Final Cut, but this is like the tools and the building blocks of the early animated features were complete, were reused as a time saver.
Yeah, it's a big, big money saver, or at least it was back in the day. This was mostly done when Walt died and the studio was sort of in trouble. So this was sort of the sketchier looking films, and I mean that literally. So right. The way the lines are a little bit more scraggly in like The Rescuers and 101 Dalmatians and Robin Hood and those sort of things. They were saving time and money by reusing certain sequences.
Right.
And they, from the beginning, Disney didn't really throw away ideas. I mean, if you look at Frozen, even, Walt Disney was in a room at one point talking about that film. So that's how long they keep ideas around. Yeah. And both Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty were basically just made out of the scraps of unused ideas that they had for Snow White.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating to me. And they did cover it. Is Blank Check a podcast you keep up with?
No, I just listened to that one.
That one episode.
They talk about used cars.
Because they just did a mini series on a director duo from Disney that did I don't remember what their movies were. It was like a 5-movie run. But that one of the ones they did that sort of ended this director's run was an idea that had again been sitting around for years, and this guy was like, look, I'll do a Beauty and the Beast for you. Like, I'll do another one of like these big, you know, the classic 90s Howard Menken ones. Mm-hmm. If you let me do this wild idea that's been circulating for years. So now I have to look it up. Let me see if I can find it. Treasure Planet.
Ah, yeah.
That Treasure Planet was an idea that had been circulating, and that the directors of that, I think they said, we will do like Princess and the Frog or Moana if you let us do Treasure Planet. Like, we'll give you a traditional song and princess movie, but we want to do this one. And so that was, again, an idea that had been floating around the Disney studios for years.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories out there of just people at the Disney studio that just put their foot down and said, this, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Which is basically how Snow White happened, is just Walt Disney. That was one of the first movies he ever saw, as a silent version of it. And so it just stuck in his mind. And when it was time to make a movie, he basically said, I liked that thing as a kid. Let's do it.
I mean, he wasn't wrong.
He was not. But then they got really cocky and said, we can do no wrong. And then they made Pinocchio, and it didn't do so well.
Pinocchio didn't go over well?
Well, they had to scrap the whole beginning of it because it was just awful by their own admission. So they just threw it all away, basically. And then by the time they had finished it up, World War II was in full effect. And so a lot of movies were like, Americans are garbage. Or a lot of countries were saying, Americans are garbage. And so they couldn't release it internationally in a lot of countries and couldn't make that sweet, sweet international cash that they made off of Snow White.
Okay. But there were some things in between Snow White and Pinocchio, right?
They were working on things.
Oh.
Bambi was supposed to come out in between.
Okay.
But it did not. And that got put behind just a little bit. They also started to come up with the idea for Lady and the Tramp, believe it or not.
Okay.
But that got bookshelved because they only got as far as Lady. That's not a joke. They literally were like, there's this dog and she's pampered and something else happens. I don't know. And then like almost 20 years later, they're like, and then she meets a dog that's not pampered. Duh.
That's, Outstanding. I mean, what a wild ride to get to, like, start an idea and revisit it 20 years later. And, like, I just, it is, it's truly hard to imagine, given how creative timelines seem to go in this century, I guess.
Yeah.
That an idea could sit for that long at a studio.
Yeah, I just read a book about the making of the Dark Crystal TV show.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had, I think, only two or three puppeteers that were on the original Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
And it had been so long since they made that film that, like, you know, all the newbies were like, well, how did you do it when you did the original? That everyone that was on set originally was like, I don't remember. That was so many years ago.
Right. Right. Yeah. How do you move the Skeksis? Who can remember?
And they had to make the Skeksis bigger, by the way.
Right. To fit. Why? Why did they have to make them bigger?
They had to make the Skeksis bigger because they had to make the Gelflings bigger, because Jim Henson, his big regret was that the Gelflings were really too small to properly puppeteer with his hand. He could barely move them to get the emotion out of them that he wanted.
Yeah.
So they were like, let's just make them a little bit bigger, which led to making everything bigger, including everything these bigger. Massive sets.
We were just talking about the Dark Crystal recently with my friend group, because there's one little girl in my friend group, she's 4, who looks like the Elflings or the Gelflings. She just looks like one of straight out of the Dark Crystal. And her dad hadn't seen it yet. And I was like, well, do not watch it with her. She is too young. I will not be responsible for scarring her. Like, give it another 4 to 8 years.
Yeah, I watched that as a kid and I was very, very confused and a bit scared. And then years later, I got the courage to watch it as an adult and I was very confused and very scared. And then I was convinced to watch the show and I fell absolutely in love with it and was absolutely heartbroken when they inevitably said, we're not going to spend millions of dollars to make the biggest puppeteering production in the world ever again. So, sorry. Yeah.
Did you ever see, now this is not a Disney movie, but it just kind of, I feel like it fits in with this genre. Did you ever see The Last Unicorn?
I didn't until they had the writer of the book at my local cinema screening it. Yeah. So I was like, well, I guess if I'm going to see it, this is how I'm going to see it.
How was it on the big screen?
It was fun. It was lovely. It looked beautiful.
Yeah. That was one that locked in as just a very scary, weird. I think it must have been on TV a fair amount. Or maybe we had a video of it. I feel like I saw it a lot as a kid. But that could mean I saw it once, you know?
Yeah. Well, if we're going down the weird rabbit hole, have you ever seen Halloween is Grinch Night?
Halloween is Grinch Night?
Yes.
As in the Grinch who stole Christmas?
Yes.
No.
Oh, it's wonderful. It is written and produced by Mr. Dr. Seuss himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it is official. And it is fairly straightforward. It feels like a Dr. Seuss thing. And it's all about how Halloween is Grinch Night, where through a series of circumstances, every Halloween, the Grinch comes down from the mountain and just makes life hell for the Whos in Whoville. And so a brave young man decides that he's going to stop this once and for all.
Right.
And the Grinch has this wagon of horrors. And as soon as this little boy is like, Grinch, I'm going to stop you, Grinch just picks him up and chucks him into the wagon of horrors, and cue a crazy psychedelic music number of just demons and ghosts and giants in no real chronological order, just surrounding and attempting to destroy this young boy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So is it the... This is clearly before his heart grew three sizes.
Right, right. But it was made afterwards, so it always kind of confused me as a kid for a number of reasons. But I also loved it, because I've always loved Halloween.
Yeah. It feels like maybe... Did Danny Elfman do Nightmare Before Christmas?
He did indeed.
It seems like a... I wonder if anyone ever asked Danny Elfman if he saw Halloween as Grinch Night.
I would think so. I feel like he dwells in the spooky.
Doesn't it feel like Nightmare Before Christmas could have been influenced by those two movies?
I think so. I think so. I mean, I don't know for certain, but I think The Grinch Who Stole Christmas... or How the Grinch Stole Christmas is part of the cultural zeitgeist. It's one of those things that's kind of hard to get away from. So I would think that there's some of that DNA in The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. But I also think specifically that there was another movie that tied The Grinch so closely to Halloween.
Right, right.
So then you get this like overlap of Halloween and Christmas if you've seen the one.
Mm.
Did you see, where did you see the Hall? Was it on TV?
Yeah, it used to be, I think, on TBS a lot. I remember it was always, like, every year it would be, I think it was on TBS.
Wow. The only Halloween's animated, like, obviously Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown is, like, the annual animated Halloween special I can think of, but I never saw the Grinch one.
Yeah, I remember there was a kid at my high school and he was going from like person to person saying like, have you seen this thing? I swear I didn't make it up. Have you seen it? And then I overheard him. I was like, oh, I totally remember that. Yeah. And he was like, I'm not crazy. Someone else saw this.
Amazing. I love it. That's how. So clearly during the pandemic, my best friends have been podcasts. So I just, my whole life is just like referencing podcasts. But when How Did This Get Made had the peanut butter solution.
Oh, yeah.
That was a movie that like all the Canadians that watch it and in the Facebook groups I'm in felt totally vindicated because that was a Canadian fever dream of a TV movie.
Yeah.
That people, again, couldn't figure out, had anybody ever seen it? Was it real? So I do love when people are able to find and give a reason to watch these truly bananas kind of obscure TV movies.
Yeah, unfortunately, none of the Disney movies that I've found have been that bananas, unfortunately.
Right.
It's usually, you know, kind of the same formula of like, oh, we gotta save the community center, or like, I've got to be friends with a moose or something like that, you know?
Yeah. So as you keep working on this list towards the end of the hunt.
Yes.
What are some of the ways, do you think with the world, with restrictions lifting, are you going to hit some like thrift stores and swap meets? Or like what's the like next level of chipping away at these movies?
I mean, I've definitely like flash forward to me with like a long gray beard, just like just like picking up like unmarked VHSs being like, perhaps this is the one that will have the absent-minded professor trading places on it. And I mean, even right now, I've just gone on eBay and looked at tapes that are just like a bunch of Disney stuff from the Disney Channel. I've been like, should I buy this? I mean, there's a slim chance, but maybe.
Right. I guess if any of them say the night that they were taped, and then, I don't know, what, an archival TV guide? That's probably, you know.
Yeah, speaking of which, I was able to disprove a movie that Jess and I were looking for actually exists because of TV guides.
Tell me more.
So when you look up a lot of these movies, because they're so hard to find, you often just find list of Disney Channel films, right?
Right.
And a lot of these movies list this one film called The Caldecott Story. And I have no idea why all these lists have The Caldecott Story on it.
Mm-hmm.
But they all agree when The Caldecott Story aired.
Okay.
So I contacted someone on eBay that was selling a cable guide, because of course back then you had to have a special guide for the Disney Channel, right?
Yeah.
So they were selling cable guide for the month and year that everyone said this movie aired. And I asked them very nicely, hey, can you flip to this day and tell me if this movie is there for the Disney Channel?
Yeah.
And they said, no, it's not there. And this is a movie that didn't have a director, an actor, nothing listed. Like, no information.
It just had gotten into...
Somehow it got there. I don't know if they announced that they were going to make it at some point and never did. I have no idea how it made it onto these lists. But this movie is not real. There is no evidence of this film.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, so I was very happy to diminish my list by one. Very satisfying. Now, if only I could find Spies from 1993, which, let me tell you, is not an easy Google search.
No.
Yeah, that's all it's called. It's just Spies.
But not the John Candy spy movie.
Nope, certainly not.
Oh, that's Spies Like Us.
Yeah, this is just Spies. 1993, you get a lot of results. A lot of results.
Yeah, yeah, that's impossible.
Yeah. But when I find it, I'll say, she said it was impossible, but I found it. She didn't believe in me.
I believe in you. But I also understand how SEO works. And so I have a real hard time imagining how you break through such a bland, like such a plain word. That's just a word that, you know, spies, movies about spies, Disney spies. I empathize with you that is a hard one, you know.
Yeah. So like a wrestling heel, I right now am going to declare that I have the rarest digital Disney movie collection in the world.
Okay.
And I'm willing to declare that for two reasons. One is because I have Googled around, I have looked around, and I have seen the lists of things that people are looking for. And I have been able to fill more holes in the list than anyone else that has responded to these Facebook groups and these message boards and everything. And the other reason why I'm willing to say this is because if someone else has a better collection than me, I want them to step forward and shut me up. Because I want them to share their goods with me.
Yes.
So I am going to say it right now. I have the rarest digital Disney movie collection in the world. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong.
That is an outstanding. It's such a good throw the gauntlet down.
Yeah.
And let the other Disney fans prove you wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, can I go through the 12 movies that I'm looking for real quick? I'm going to rattle these off real quick.
You don't
quick.
Even have to go real quick. You can say them at a normal speed.
Okay, feel free to stop me if you have any questions about these, because I have a lot of questions about some of these. All right, here we go. It's The Track of the African Bongo, Trail of Danger, Shadow of Fear, The Secret of Lost Valley, Strange Companions, U.S. Marshals, Waco and Reinhardt, a.k.a. Line of Duty, as it was released on VHS in the UK, as I found out. Meet the Munsies, The Absent-Minded Professor, Trading Places, Just Perfect, Spies, again, that's from 1993, The Barefoot Executive, the remake from 95, and yes, I know that there's a half hour of it on YouTube, but that's not the whole thing. And no, the very nice person who uploaded it does not have the whole thing. They just have that piece of it. And then finally, the aforementioned Ladies and the Champ.
I don't think I've seen a single one of them.
Yes, and I'm fairly certain, except for Line of Duty, aka U.S. Marshals, Waco and Reinhardt, none of them have had home video releases. And what's really frustrating about Line of Duty is I had a friend in the UK get a converter for their VHS so they could, for their VCR, so they could rip it for me.
Yeah.
And they had it. They had the one VHS copy that was on Amazon.co.uk in their shopping cart, and someone bought it out from under them. And I haven't been able to find an English copy yet. There are two German copies on eBay, but they are dubbed.
Are they dubbed?
Not subbed. Yes, they are dubbed. I double checked. Yes.
And then the one, the absent-minded professor trading places sounds right. Like a. Isn't that's a mashup? It's a crossover, right? It's
got to be a crossover of two movies. No, it is a sequel to the second lesser-known absent-minded professor remake, not to be confused with Flubber, starring Robin Williams, which was the second remake of the original.
Oh, I was absolutely thinking of Flubber.
Yeah,
but the same. Wait. How many times has it been remade?
Okay, so first there was Fred McMurray.
Yes, from my three sons.
Right, and then Harry Anderson starred in a remake.
Okay.
And then they did a sequel to that with Ed Begley Jr. entitled The Absent-Minded Professor Trading Places.
Okay.
And then they did another remake with Robin Williams called Flubber.
Wow.
And also there was a second Fred McMurray one before the Harry Anderson one called Son of Flubber.
Son of Flubber, I remember.
Yes, so there's five Flubber movies, basically.
Okay. And I do think having Harry Anderson replaced by Ed Begley Jr. is... There's something very funny about that to me.
Oh, no, he is not replaced. They switch bodies in the film.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, so it's a body swap.
It's a body swap, yes.
And that's why it's called Trading Places.
Exactly.
Oh, and okay.
Typically, if you Google The Absent-Minded Professor and Trading Places, you just get people that own those two respective movies saying...
Right.
Here are the DVDs I own.
Yeah. And have you tried getting Ed Begley Jr. on Cameo yet?
I don't think he's on there, but, you know, I actually sent an email to the now professor who is the, the now professor who is the co-writer of the script, and he didn't get back to me.
Oh, bummer.
Yes, he had a very easy to access university email.
Yeah.
And he didn't get back to me about whether or not he had a copy of it.
Yeah. Well, it does look like Ed Begley Jr. is he's on Cameo.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth a shot, but man, that guy is prolific. I mean, he's had quite a career. I don't know if he even remembers that movie.
Right.
But I guess I'm about to throw another $9 down to message Ed Begley Jr.
Right. Do you ever use, like, IMDb Pro to try and get to people?
Haven't done that yet, but I think that might be my next strategy.
Because you get a 7-day free trial, and you can get a lot of email addresses in 7 days.
Oh,
from IMDb Pro.
All right.
Yeah. It's, you don't have to make the commitment to, like, a month or a year or anything. And you can, like, I would have your plan ready to go.
Okay. You sound like someone who's done this before. Who have you frantically emailed through IMDb Pro?
Jason Mantzoukas's publicist. Oh. I want him to come on this podcast and talk about Jodie Mitchell.
Oh, okay.
But I asked, I made the invitation, I think, honestly, before I had published a single episode.
Ooh, that was a mistake.
It was a mistake. But it was the pandemic. It was the beginning of the pandemic. And I just was feeling like, you know, go big or go home. Yeah. So IMDb Pro is a good, it's a useful tool.
Okay, so you give me the $9 to message Ed Begley Jr., and I, in return, will use my free trial of IMDb Pro to contact Jason Mantzoukas now that you have this wonderful array of recorded podcasts under your belt to show to entice him on.
Yes.
And we can scratch each other's backs, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Max, this has been a blast. Is there a treasure hunt that you see after this? I mean, you may be an old gray grizzled man before you find the last Disney film. But are there any other lists out there that you're looking forward to hunting, or this is a very specific endeavor?
I think there will always be some movie that I'll be looking for a VHS recording of, or I'll be hoping that someone finds in a vault. I am a film fanatic that goes just beyond my love of Disney, so I will always be hoping, like, I hope someone finds The Mountain Eagle by Alfred Hitchcock. Someone must have it, you know? That'll be like my rosebud on my deathbed. Just going, The Mountain Eagle, which by his own accord wasn't a very good film. And he wasn't very sad that that film was lost. But
yeah,
I think I will always keep hunting for films.
Awesome. What are some lesser known, but either Amazon Prime, Netflix, or Disney Plus movies that you like to recommend to people?
Oh, that's a big question. Are we narrowing it down to just Disney?
No. Let's do one Disney. And then one that's not, like, too spooky.
One that's not too spooky. I mean, watch Halloween is Grinch Night. I think that's
YouTube.
Yeah. But let's see. What is a good Disney film to watch? You know, I watched The Littlest Horse Thieves recently, and that was pretty good. I feel like it's become a little bit forgotten, but Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Yes.
A lot of people forget about that one, but I still find that one delightful. You gotta strap yourself in for kind of a long one. It's a little bit longer, and it takes a while to get to the animation and the fun stuff that everyone remembers. But Angela Lansbury, I mean, you can't go wrong.
No, that was Bedknobs and Broomsticks was when I got Disney Plus, which I got for Hamilton, like a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrilled that Bedknobs and Broomsticks was one of the recommended movies. And I started watching it. And then I was like, oh, yeah, this is I'm not prepared. I don't have the right snacks. But it's such a fun movie.
And in terms of animated stuff, not much of it is obscure. So I would say watch Saludos Amigos. It's pretty short. It's pretty enjoyable. And it was created to combat Nazi propaganda in South America.
Oh, okay. Great. Well, Max, do you want people to find you online? Should they follow you on Twitter or YouTube or the podcast? Anything you'd like to promote?
I mean, they probably shouldn't follow me on Twitter or anything else because I don't know how much that's really going to enrich their life. But I have a rather unique name. So if you look up Max Pacheco, you're going to find me. But what you should be listening to after you're done with every episode of this podcast is Sporadic Phantoms. That is my favorite thing that I'm working on right now, and I cannot take the credit for how great it is, but I very much recommend it.
Fantastic. Well, Max, thank you. This has been a great way to spend a Thursday night.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.